You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Listen.
This week on Unboxed, I'm joined by Callum Airey, who you might know as Cal Freezy. He is a YouTuber and co-founder of The Fellas Studios, which is a production house for some of the biggest internet podcasts in the UK. He's also close friends with The Sidemen and has been for a number of years, featuring in hilarious videos and creating some unbelievable content for his own channel, including putting on a funeral for JJ's hamster. Let's get into it with Cal Freezy. Cal Freezy, thank you so much for coming on Unboxed.
Thank you very much for having me, man. This is exciting.
This is so exciting.
The setup is legit.
Yeah, man. This is a proper thing.
Yeah, it's proper thing. Cool.
All right, so I want to start off slightly differently. Okay. What motivates you?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, so I actually had JJ on my podcast, and I asked him a really similar question, because I, to be honest, I don't usually get into like those sort of topics, like the deep topics, as we call them. But I actually asked him because I was really interested about what he had to say
on legacy, right?
And his whole thing was legacy, and me and him probably went back and forth for about 20 minutes about legacy. And because for me, I maybe have like a, I don't know what the term is, but a maybe not a positive outlook on legacy, in the sense that I think that the moment you die, who cares?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, who really cares? Like, what does it matter about? Like, you can't enjoy that. You can't enjoy that legacy. But maybe he says that, you know, you inspire people coming up, whatever it is. But for me, it made me realize that I don't think, like, going through this conversation, and while that is his thing, it's still, for me, legacy isn't something that motivates me. I feel like I also, especially of late, have a real motivation to prove something. And I don't know who I'm proving it to. Maybe it's the people around me, or maybe, because I don't feel like people necessarily doubt me in a certain way. You know, I've never had that feeling, but I do feel like I need to have a stamp of success, at least through my own eyes.
Yeah.
And I think because my YouTube channel has happened over like 12 years now, it's hard to see that as success. Like, that's just my life, if that makes any sense. So to me, I can't look at that and be like, oh, that's success. I feel like there is something else that I need to do to achieve that. But then maybe that I never get that moment. And so that's maybe like the fear, maybe a bit of fear for me, is that I'm actually chasing something that doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know, man. I think it does. I'm convinced it does.
Yeah. So you talk about your journey. So for those who don't know, most people probably do, but what is your journey of 12 years? Some of the highs, some of the lows. Like, yeah, talk us through that incredible process.
So yeah, I mean, I'm very privileged that this has actually been my only job. So I started when I was 15. And back then, I mean, Google AdSense was not a thing.
Yeah. You know, creators didn't get paid anything, right?
No. But not only did they not get paid anything, the idea of getting paid was so surreal. This was like the platform YouTube. Sorry, I should say that I'm talking about making YouTube videos here when I'm 15. It was never a thing. And even back then, like, companies weren't getting paid when I started, right? Probably about a year into my YouTube journey, people started getting paid, like companies started to get like paid, and being able to offer other creators to join them to get paid. It was all a lot more confusing back then. But when I was 15, I started making gaming content, because, you know, as most 15-year-old kids these days, or even back then, you know, you play games. It was Call of Duty for me. I would play it. I was very fortunate that I had a really good core group of friends at school, though. Because that is ultimately the biggest battle that I imagine young people face when they want to start something like this, because the risk to reward is extremely not in your favor.
Why is that?
What other people around you, what your peers will see as successes is through numbers. Mm. And it is difficult to get that. Especially when you are younger and you might not necessarily understand how to do it or maybe have the quality to do it.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough that back then it was such a new space that there was nothing to compare it to. So you could look around a little bit, but the quality, it wasn't difficult to achieve the quality. You know, a 15-year-old kid could do that.
Yeah.
Whereas now I don't think that it is too difficult.
Mm, there's too many markers of success that everyone's like, well, your videos is only on 100 views. Like,
they're going to compare this kid to Mini Minter's videos. They're going to compare it to
your videos.
You know, Stephen Tries, whoever it is. Yeah. Right. So, and I think that's why being at school, it can be extremely tough. And you know how kids are, like, they're not there being like, I see the potential. Yeah. You know, that doesn't exist. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah. I think being a kid and making videos now would be a lot more difficult.
Mad. I mean, that's so interesting, right? So you've been through the scene from the kind of raw early days of the platform where people could put up anything. If it was funny, if it was real, it would resonate and get results. YouTube then becomes ultimately an ad platform. You mentioned before about monetization turning on. And then now, obviously, it's in many ways dictated by the principles of monetization and how brands need to engage with the platform. And algorithms are a lot more, as you say, optimized, structured, scientific, alongside the art, which was sort of, I guess, instinctual for all of you guys back in the day. How have you found that change in terms of the platform becoming more, I guess, robotic in a sense, right? Or more structured? You have to think more about strategy rather than just instinctually going out and making something.
I really like it, you know. And that might... A lot of people probably wouldn't agree with me because I think it's quite easy to look at those old days or like back in the day and go, you know, life was better. And it was like, I didn't need to know as much. I could just put up what I wanted. Mm. But I think if it just stays like that, then I'd be so bored. I'd be so like whatever, like the constant challenge of the fact that the platform is evolving has always made it a challenge to me.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think that's amazing. There's always something to conquer. There's always something to learn. And I've always felt like I felt like in the last 2 years, I'm probably better at this, but I was always like one step behind everyone else.
Right.
Because I wasn't taking things maybe as seriously or really looking into things the way I should have. But now I find such joy in that.
Yeah,
And I really see that as a challenge. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why I'm still around on the platform.
Yeah.
Is because it hasn't stayed the same.
Yeah. So you've made so many videos through your time, right? One thing I was really interested in, what is your favorite video you've ever made and what is your least favorite video in recent times?
In recent times, I mean, definitely instantly my favorite one would be the funeral, the hamster funeral. And I think it was just the way that video came about.
I mean, the process, how did you come up with it? How did you put it together?
Yeah.
So much would have gone into making that happen, right?
Yeah, so I'm very lucky that I've got a great team behind me. So I can't even really take credit for that idea. And so that was my assistant, Amrita. And so what we do is we'll often sit together, brainstorm ideas. And I mean, sometimes we'll honestly sit there and we'll come up with nothing. We'll be sat there for like 2 hours and I'll just be there like, guys, I just, this
blank.
Sucks.
Yeah, I'm going home.
This sucks. But it was so funny. The first time we were actually, it was sat in a cafe when we were going through this and she goes, why don't we do a funeral for the hamster? Like that. And instantly I shut it down. I was like, that is a fucking terrible idea. And then we moved on to a few other video ideas and I went,
You know what?
That hamster video actually
kind of
could
bangs,
bang.
You know,
So she said it as a bit of a joke. Like, because she's also a bit notorious for like, she just comes up with, it's either the worst idea in the world or it's unbelievable.
But you want people like that in the 2 minute, either way, nothing lukewarm.
You never know what you're going to get. I promise you never get a mid video.
Good.
You know?
Good. That's what we want.
She said that. And then I was there like, because then, I was like, right, okay, let's come back. Let's keep talking about this hamster video then. First of all, we need to find a location to do this. And once I had the location and everything, then I can start sending invites out because I don't want to invite people and then have to message them all like, oh, it's not happening because I couldn't find a place.
Yeah.
So it's now like a few days only until we get the location secured. Mm. By the way, this place is central. Like we're talking, this was St. Paul, like next to St. Paul's, right? That we've got this. And again, this is Amrita, my assistant. She absolutely smashed it. Like I couldn't believe it when she told me that we have a location like that, a church. And then not only that, but they're okay with it being for a hamster. Because a lot of people actually, I got messages about it, like, this is disrespectful. Mm. They're only saying that because it's a YouTube video. Mm. If this was on Netflix.
If it was a film.
If this was a film,
yeah,
people would just say this is a funny skit.
Yeah.
So I think there has to be that element to it. Yeah. But we did, you know, we went about it all the right ways to make sure that we were as respectful as we could be to the actual place, because it is a holy place. It just, everything came together and it all went way smoother than it should have done.
Yeah.
Like a video like that, 2 weeks notice.
Didn't kick up. So some of the much best stuff time, going on. Some of the best things are like that though, right? Where they're very last minute. You've got to just get it done, whatever, however. And then I guess because, again, right, you guys, all such good friends, some amazing people in the room, the banter's there, like, we're just having a good time.
Like, it's Ethan's just giggling away. JJ's like proper half silly. Kind of fake sad, but also is sad.
Yeah.
He actually had a hamster die. His second hamster died recently, and my mentions were a mess. They were like, another funeral. I was like, guys, we're not doing it.
You know what? To put that together.
Oh, yeah. Not only that, but I did think, it's one of those, it's like, the reason why it's kind of funny is also a bit like the shock value.
You
can't believe that I'm doing a funeral for a hamster. It's an insane amount of effort, right?
Yeah.
And so I just think, if you do it again, I was there like, there's no real way for me to improve on this. And it will never have the feeling that you got from the first one.
Definitely. So. And that shock value is really interesting, right? When Max was on, he was saying about contradiction is like the essence of his planning and his strategy, which I think is really... really interesting and stuck with me. The idea that everything he does has to be two extremes which you would never expect together being together in some way, shape or form. Like
wow, that's really interesting.
Going to this £10 million penthouse and doing a poo.
Yeah.
Or whatever it might be. It's like having that contradiction is always there. And that's partly why the shock value, having a funeral for a hamster, is so weird and wonderful that you got to kick all of them in. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Stuck with
that. Yeah, that's really interesting that he does that. And you can certainly see that theme in like all of the videos that he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. I would love to say that I have like a principle similar to that when I sit down, but it, I know, and maybe that's something
there's an instinct I work on.
Yeah, there is definitely an instinct.
Mm.
I don't have like a. I like the fact that he has that.
Yeah,
I think
it just stuck me when he said that. I was like, that's really good. And actually, the essence of comedy is also that when you think about it, it's like what makes you laugh is two extremes coming together. Mm-hmm. Something over here and there's something ridiculous and the delta between them is what makes you laugh. It's a weird way of like, I guess, processing comedy, but it is true, I think. Right, let's move on to what I think is one of the most exciting things that have happened, I think, in the space, which is everything you're doing in the podcast world with the Fellas Studios, obviously with the Fellas podcast. Mm-hmm. So for those who don't know, obviously, again, I'm sure everyone does, what is the Fellas and how did it evolve into this incredible production company producing some of the biggest and best shows in the world?
Yeah. Well, that's very kind of you to say. So thank you for that. We take a lot of pride in it. And I know Chip, my co-host, co-founder, it takes a lot of pride in especially the visuals and the quality of the shows. He's almost our quality control for everything, which is great. I'll quickly explain how everything started and what it is. So me and Chip, we started a podcast in lockdown. I spent 2 years asking him to do a podcast, though. Don't get it twisted.
Did you?
I'm not even joking. I genuinely... And it got to the point where I was like, look, because I really wanted to do a podcast. As every mid-20s white guy in the world felt the need to share his opinions for no good reason.
Yeah, well...
But it worked out, so...
It did.
Honestly, in the middle of lockdown, I said, bro, look...
We're doing it.
I was there like, look, let's give this a shot. Mm. If you don't like it, I promise you we'll just sack it off. And he gave me two things. He gave me like one must have. He said, look, if we're going to do a podcast, it has to have a set. I'm not doing a podcast where it doesn't look nice. It needs to look like visually really nice.
Not just a Zoom podcast like everyone else.
No. Yeah,
this needs to be proper.
That's what I mean. And I was
interesting. That was the first thing you said.
Literally, and I'm not even joking. So on this phone call, because I'd called him up, and I actually called him up as a joke because it became a running joke that I would just call him up to say, "Let's do a podcast." It happened so many times. So I called him up again. It's lockdown. There was nothing better to do. I'd made my 164th call to him. You know, whatever. Yo, let's do a podcast. And he just went, "All right, cool."
Sorry, what?
And I was like, "Really?" And he was like, "Yeah." And then he gave me that demand. And I was like, "Yeah, fine, whatever. Like, that's cool." So he started like sketching stuff out, coming up with ideas, sent me like across a mood board. Now, Chip is amazing creatively, but and he won't mind me saying this, but it's like when it comes to actually actioning stuff.
Yeah.
That's probably or like executing it. Like he honestly is so great creatively.
But you need someone to go.
He needs someone to get done. And I actually felt like that is my strength. Like my weakness is probably the creative side of things. And but I'll actually go and make this happen. So, a part of me also thought that he thought maybe him doing all this might just make me go, "Oh, man, I can't be asked." Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he fucked around and found out. So
here we are.
So we got that whole thing made, and we got honestly, like this is a nice sized room here. Ours was even smaller than this. Yeah. It was tiny, but
where was it?
It was over in Hackney, over London Fields Way.
Yeah.
And it was like a literal box.
Like squeezing.
So we got this space, right? And because we had to sign a year lease on it. Mm. We were there like, "We're going to give this a go for a few months." But
yeah.
we wanted the cheapest rent we could get, smallest space. I'm telling you, this place was tiny, right? Mm. And we put our set in, but we measured the set to be built to the dimensions of the room because we needed to fill this thing out. It was already tiny.
Yeah.
Our cameras were literally, you couldn't see the preview screen because they were backed against the wall.
Wait.
Yeah. Like they were.
Did you have to like flip the back screen up?
The cameras we had didn't split. It didn't flip.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like we just, you hit record and you just.
I think it's recording.
Yeah. We're there like press play. Yeah. So it's all back. So we had to, the room was so small. Anyways, we were really lucky with how all that went. You know, 6 months in where they're like, "Okay, I think we're going to give this a proper go. Let's get a slightly bigger space." Moved into a bigger one. The podcast just kept going and going. We were very lucky in the sense that we already had quite a few close friends that were open to coming on. It was very, you know, you're never going to come on our podcast and get grilled.
Yeah.
Right. That's just not what we want to do. That we're not interested in that. Mm. And I think that's almost quite a nice thing if you're a guest. You know, you're not going to come up. We're going to talk about childish, stupid things. We're going to make stupid jokes. That's all you're signing up for. Right. Mm. And we're going to ask you a little bit about your life or things going on in your life, but it is so relaxed. And I think that definitely plays a part in why people like coming on.
Mm.
But we did that. And then me and Chip went on holiday and there was like this running joke about us being detectives. Right. I can't remember it exactly, but we just said that. And then we were like, "We should do a true crime show."
Mm.
And Chip was like, "Oh man, I'd love a true crime set." So we'd moved into this new space and there was a space for another set. So we're like, "Okay, we'll do that then." Instantly he starts doing the same thing he did for the Fellas, start mood boarding and everything. And we had our true crime show, The Fellas Mysteries. And that was loads of fun. Smashed that out.
Mm.
And then we just kept going with it. And we got to the end of probably like 18 months into The Fellas and we'd signed a deal with Spotify, which was great because it really just gave us like a stable income. So the podcast world can be pretty scary because you don't know how much money you're going to make. Yeah. And that's totally normal, but it fluctuates. So we were there like, "Right, okay, stable income. We're literally getting paid this every year.
Yeah.
What now?" Like for me, it was always much more than, "Look, doing this podcast is great, but there has to be more to it. We just signed a multi-year deal here. In the same way, I needed like not a new challenge. It wasn't this had ended, but it had given me a bit of breathing space to look back and go, "Right, okay, what's next?" They've given me a bunch of money here. I need to do something with this money. This just sitting in my bank account. It'll look great,
but it's not
going to do anything for me.
Yeah.
In fact, it's just losing me. It's losing
especially
me.
Now.
Yeah. I'm glad it didn't say it all in there. And I pitched the idea to Chip, and I was there like, mate, we know how to make a successful podcast. Mm. We just looked around and we went, nobody is making podcasts as nice as we are. And that was probably the best way to put it. No one's making it as nice.
Yeah.
So we went, let's approach creators and just see if they'd be willing to let us produce them a podcast. And that's quite a scary thing to do, because you're almost meddling in your own pool of people. There's a lot more pressure when it's your own peers.
Yeah. And they're putting themselves out there under your...
They're trusting us.
But under your kind of pitch. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So like, imagine we do it and it's dog shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they're like, this is so... the main fear is humiliation, right? Because you don't... That's failure, like, you know.
Yeah, and with your friends.
And with your friends and the people in your circle. Yeah. And everybody knows how this space works. The word moves so quickly, doesn't it? So we were there like, look, I'm willing to give this a go. Let's do it. So we picked up our first show, which was Pitch Side. And again, these are with two of our closest friends, Theo and Reeve. And it was a football watch along. Mm. And we created them like this locker room set that they still have now. And they're like, yeah, man, like this is pretty cool. We got a space down the road. It got up and going and we're really happy. And then my girlfriend, she had told me about a TikToker. And she was like, you got to go. She's hilarious. I'm always hearing her voice on her phone. And I'm there like, who is that? She's like, oh, her name's GK Barry. She's absolutely hilarious. You got to check her out. And so we were like, okay, cool. And she actually said, oh, if you're going to be making podcasts for other people, you should make one for her.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm going to get her on as a guest first. It's always like a great
joke. Yeah,
if you ever want to see if we're going to be doing a show with someone, chances are they've been a guest on our podcast because we almost use it as a...
Interview, really.
How does this person do on a podcast? Like, do they hold their own?
Are they confident? Are they bringing... And also the response online, right? The sentiment.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure you get an immediate sense of, this person's got it, whatever that is.
Exactly. So we brought her on, and she was honestly hilarious, and it was like so much better than when it literally. So most people, you never want to seem too keen. Mm. The moment she left the studio, I messaged her manager. Yeah. I messaged her manager and said, "Does she want to do her own show?"
Yeah,
and I was really fortunate that her manager, because again, you're looking at. It is a company, but we've just got one show. We've got our show and one other show. Mm. Like, this is a massive gamble that you're going to be taking to take your client and be like, yeah, we're going to have it. I mean, there's so many other podcast production studios out there. Mm. And then Saving Grace was born, which is the name of her podcast. And it did unbelievable. Yeah. It was like, she's currently on tour right now. Mm. And then from Saving Grace, from there... We've been very fortunate that we've now expanded into loads of different verticals, F1, another TikTok show.
Yeah.
We've got another football show as well. And then we have three currently being built. Yeah. I'm actually on the verge of not even calling our things podcasting. They're shows.
They're shows, 100%. Yeah. So they're personality-led shows.
Yeah, I want to call them shows.
Yeah. Now. Well, there's no reason why in time they can't be compared to some of the late shows in America or even the way that American news works, right? So many of the kind of radio shows over in the States are personality-driven. And there's always somebody's name. It's like the X show. And it's like they're on every day or they're on weekly. And they were never considered as podcast, but now if you were to do that, you'd call it a podcast. But why, when they're actually video focused predominantly, and they're more just about conversation and personalities driving that, right? They're not podcast hot. So I think it's really interesting what you guys are doing. I think it's amazing.
I think honestly the only reason why it gets called a podcast is they probably see that it's over an hour long and there's a visible mic.
Looking out there at the scene and looking at TikTok and maybe speaking to your girlfriend, who are, let's say...
She's the secret plug right there.
The secret plug.
Man.
A lot of people...
Well, someone's going to go and hire her now.
Employee number one. What are three creators, 3 to 5 people who you look at and you go, I would love to make a podcast with them?
Okay. Well, one, the first person on your list, right, we've literally just signed. So that was sick.
Yeah.
Now, the other two... Here is the money-making podcast right here.
Go on.
Ethan and Faith, couple podcast. Right. Those two right there. I've said it from the beginning. I've said it to Ethan.
100%.
Bro, I'm telling you, that podcast is huge. To the moon, right? And I've said it to him.
I would even say not just a podcast.
A show, mate. Bro, you build the brand around it. That's what we're doing at the Fellow Studio, right? So it starts with the show and you build. Like, there's so much more you can do. Mm. But in terms of those two, they're amazing. But obviously, a newborn, super busy. Ethan's schedule as it is with the Sidemen stuff is absolutely nuts. So, look, I understand that, but I'm telling you, it would bang.
So to wrap up, last two questions. Firstly, where do you see the future of the creator economy going?
Hopefully in the direction that we're aiming with the Fellow Studios, in that owning your own stuff and building out your own things and working with the right people to do that, and not just accepting lump sums of cash for short-term gain, really having the vision. What the Sidemen are doing is really like, that is the gold standard. Now that you guys are doing it, it's like, right, I just hope that the business world is taking note of what's going on there and goes, right, who else can we do this with?
Yeah. And I think for us as well, is obviously as part of that, it's finding, hopefully being the bridge into some of these conversations from a more corporate side, which is obviously the world that I come from, where you can go and actually fly the flag for this scene and say, look, this is like the first step in at this level, but actually look at this incredible ecosystem of creators and you guys need to take this space seriously. And hopefully that's happening. I think it is to maybe a small degree, but hopefully that continues.
Yeah, it's exciting though. Yeah. The creator economy is just not slowing down, regardless of, you can look at, you know, the way the economy in general is right now and how things, you know, they're not looking great, particularly in the UK anyways. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I feel like there is a little bubble around content and creators. I mean, you saw it throughout the pandemic. Mm. Nothing really changed. A lot of earnings and things went down elsewhere.
Yeah.
But the creator bubble itself, it just kept going, man. So, I think content is just...
Bulletproof.
It's king, man.
100%. Right. And who is a creator that you are loving at the moment?
Ooh, a creator that I'm loving at the moment is, I got to say, AJ Shabil. And that's not like, he's obviously well known in this scene, but I don't think he ever gets his dues. Like, this guy is, if you watch his video, he's creating some of the best, if not the best, videos in the UK right now.
Yeah, I think his packaging and the way he puts together the strategy, the optimization is just exceptional.
The guy is literally the epitome of like 2022, 2023 optimization, like retention hacking, everything. Yeah. And it's just so sick to see a UK creator do that. And so I've bigged him up a few times on the Fellas, but I feel like I should wave his flag here as well.
100%. And lastly, for somebody who's looking to start out in YouTube or in the creator space generally, what would be your advice after 12 hardened years doing this yourself?
You got to do your own thing. You have to do your own thing. Do not try and do, like, you can take inspiration from people. That's absolutely normal. And it's kind of annoying because this is all like generic stuff, like do your own thing, da da da. But it's honestly, it is the way you're going to make it now. And then the very second to that is, you have to be comfortable working with other people. Yeah. Nowadays, you just doing your own thing solo, it's not going to work. It's going to take you only so far. And you've seen it with the best YouTubers. You know, they get to a point and then they start working with loads of other people because it's fun. It's way more fun working with other people. And then second of all, it's a necessity. Like, you know, you want your stuff to be seen by as many people as possible. You got to have other people that share your stuff, and don't be afraid to feel like you deserve to be in that room speaking to people. When you're there, be respectful, but at the same time, let people know that you're out here, you're trying to make videos, or you are making videos, and that you want to work with other people. So yeah, put yourself out there, I guess.
Golden. Cal, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Unboxed with Jordan Schwarzenberger is a Listen original in partnership with Arcade Media. The exec producer is Amber Bateman, the senior producer is Lucy Hunt, and the senior digital producer is Alice Tilley. Unbox is recorded at PRL Studios in West London with the support of Michael Kalizinski.
C3. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.